Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Our listener support campaign continues, and you can support the show on a one-time basis at support.greatdetectives.net. And I want to thank Brian and Chuck. Thank you so much for your support. You can also support the program with the Zelle app, box13@greatdetectives.net, or by mailing in your donation to Adam Graham, P.O. Box 15913, that's P.O. Box 15913, Boise, Idaho 83715. And if you do send along a donation of $20 or more, we'll happily send you an ebook of your choice from those listed at support.greatdetectives.net. And we have All I Needed to Know I Learned from Dragnet, which also includes a chapter on yours truly, Johnny Dollar. And with a donation of $100 or more, we'll happily send you either a Great Detectives of Old Time Radio t-shirt or a Johnny Dollar Anniversary t-shirt. You can also get the Johnny Dollar Anniversary t-shirt without a donation by going to yourstruly.greatdetectives.net. Full list of available thank you gifts at support.greatdetectives.net. Now we're going to get into Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar with Bob Bailey. Bob Bailey played Johnny Dollar for more than 5 years. The first year was the serialized version that we played on Sunday, and then he starred in a half-hour version of the series. Today's program originally aired November the 25th of 1956, and this one is The Royal Street Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Why, man? How's your stomach, Johnny?
What?
Rich food give you any trouble?
Who is this?
Why, your old buddy, Angie Orsatti.
Oh, hi, Angie. Glad you got my message.
Yeah. How about dinner tonight at Antoine's, Johnny? Shrimp gumbo, oysters, Rockefeller.
Yeah, sounds fine. Only I've got to do some work first.
Man, I thought you were here in New Orleans on vacation.
Nope. Little matter of fire insurance and the company's check for $16,000.
Somebody trying to cheat him out of it, huh?
You won't believe this, Angie. Somebody turned it down.
What?
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of a man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Providential Fire and Marine, 787 Greenleaf Avenue, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Royal Street matter. Expense account item 1, $103.82, transportation to New Orleans. Item 2, $4.20, cab from the airport to the Roosevelt Hotel. After unpacking, I put in the call to my old friend, Angie Orsatti. Nobody knows the French Quarter or the people living there like Angie does. For 3 months of the winter, he stays in the swamp, trapping muskrats. The rest of the year, he lives with his mother near the Cabildo. Angie wasn't in, but his mother said she knew where to reach him, and 5 minutes later, he returned my call. We arranged to meet for dinner, then I phoned the agent who had sold the policy in question. His name's Binford, and naturally, he was anxious to see me. C.D. Binford's office is on the third floor of the Hibernia Bank building. He's a stocky, red-faced man, probably in his late 50s.
Come in, Mr. Dollar. Come in, come in.
Thanks.
Help yourself to the chair. Say, you fellas sure don't waste any time, do you?
We try not to, Mr. Binford.
C.D., boy.
What?
You call me C.D. like all the other folks do.
Oh, okay, C.D.
Yeah. Now, like I was saying, you boys sure don't waste any time at all. Why, I didn't even call the home office till day before yesterday.
I know. When was the fire?
last week on Thursday night. What'd they tell you about it?
Well, not very much. Figured I'd get all the information from you.
Well, it's a doozy. First time I've ever run across a policyholder who wasn't yelling for us to pay him yesterday for his loss today. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Who is the insured, C.D.?
Man named DuPas, Henry DuPas. Took out a policy for $48,000. That's full coverage on his antique shop down on Royal Street.
How long ago?
August, just 3 months back. I've been after him for, maybe 5-6 months to buy some protection, but he kept saying he didn't have the money.
Didn't have the money.
And one day I dropped in to see him about his car insurance, and right off he told me to write a policy giving him full fire coverage on the shop.
Well, how do you arrange to pay it?
Cash, in full, the day I delivered the policy.
He tell you why he changed his mind?
Yeah, not exactly. Bet he mentioned something about times being better. I reckon there must have been.
Why'd he say that?
Well, a few days later, he had the back part of his shop all painted and fixed up. And that's the part that burned. And he hired himself a girl to work in the office, a real good looker, too.
Well, what caused the fire, you know?
I sure do. Antique kerosene lamp got knocked over accidental. According to what DuPas told the fireman, he was in the back of the shop with a customer showing him the lamp.
Uh-huh.
When it fell, the fire started. The two of them tried to put it out. Reckon that's why they didn't call the fire department right off.
Uh-huh. And did DuPas tell you the same thing?
DuPas? He didn't tell me nothing.
Well, he reported the fire to you, didn't he?
He did not. And that's what's got me so riled up. I wouldn't know about it now if I hadn't dropped in there the other day.
Was DuPas there when you stopped in?
Yes, sirree. And when I saw how the place looked, the whole back of the store gutted out and the slew of his antiques destroyed, I let him have both barrels, I tell you.
Oh, what'd he say to that?
Well, nothing too much. Just acted like he wasn't interested in whether we paid for it or not. Didn't even ask for a claim for him.
That's funny.
Sure is. I thought maybe he was so upset over losing some of his valuable antiques, he didn't know what he was doing.
Mm.
So, after I checked with the fire department, got a copy of their report, I typed up a claim for him.
You figured the damage at $16,000, right?
Mm-hmm. I knew how much he spent fixing up the back. When I'd issued the policy, I'd gotten an estimate on most of the antiques.
So what happened when you gave him the claim? He signed it?
He did not. Said to forget about the fire.
Huh?
And when I kept after him, he called me a busybody and told me to get out of his shop and stay out.
What do you think, C.D.? You have any idea why he didn't report it or sign that claim?
If I had, boy, I wouldn't have sent for you.
I left Binford's office and walked over to Canal Street. The sun had gone down and a cool breeze was coming in off the river, bringing with it the smell of coffee beans and fruit from the banana boats. I crossed Canal and turned onto Royal, heading into the French Quarter. When I reached Henry DuPas' antique shop, I stopped. There are a lot of antique shops on Royal. All of them look pretty much the same. The buildings as old as the fine rosewood mahogany pieces they shelter. There was nothing different about this one, at least from the outside. The fire had started and finished in the rear of the building. I tried the front door, but it was locked. I didn't think anyone would be there that late, but I knocked anyway.
Yes, who is it?
Mr. DuPas?
Who is it?
My name's Dollar, Mr. DuPas. I represent the Providential Fire and Marine.
Why do you people persist in annoying me?
Well, we wouldn't if you'd tell us about the fire.
There's
you
nothing
here.
Special about that fire, Mr. Dollar. It was an accident.
Well, then why didn't you file a claim? You're entitled to enough money to cover your loss.
Mr. Binford explained that to me quite carefully. If you haven't talked to him, Mr. Dollar, you should.
Oh, I've talked to him.
Well, then go away.
Well, not until you answer a few
questions. No, leave me alone, please.
I'd noticed an alley next to the shop that ended where the rear door had been. I started back along it, not quite sure what I was looking for or what I expected to find. But I was sure of one thing. DuPas was a frightened man. It was too dark to see anything at the end of the alley, so I returned to the street. Item 3, $30.50, phone call, taxi, and dinner for two at Antoine's.
Oh, man. Kind of nice, ain't it, Johnny?
Hmm?
Oh, the way it never changes. Same waiter, same chef, same clientele.
Yeah. Like another Cafe Royale, Ashy?
No, thanks. Well, Johnny?
Yeah?
Well, when you gonna ask me?
Ask you what?
Oh, don't kid me, John. You've had that old bloodhound look in your eye ever since we sat down. What's the question?
Okay, Angie. What do you know about a man named Henry DuPont?
DuPont's antique shop?
That's right.
Oh, not much. Seen him around some, so.
Yeah, where?
Oh, you know what kind of places I like, Johnny.
Yeah, but I can't picture DuPont liking them.
Well, maybe he don't, but maybe that little old blonde he's been carrying with him does.
Blonde?
Yeah, you know. Female, girl, bleached hair.
I know.
Yeah.
How old?
Oh, 24, 5. Yeah, real nice for old coot like him.
Real winter and spring, huh?
Yeah.
You seen them together often?
Oh, a few times. Saw him about 2 weeks ago at Butcher's place. Hey, you know something? I walked in there that night with a 5, and I walked out with 200. How about that?
Great. You know who the blonde is?
No, but I might be able to find out. You want?
Yeah, I want. I left Angie and started back toward Royal Street. On the way, I ran up item 4, $1.85 for one flashlight and batteries. The shades on DuPont's shop were drawn, but I could tell there were lights on inside. In the alley, a small pickup truck was parked near the side entrance to the shop. In the back of the truck, looking like they'd just been taken off the boat, were several stalks of bananas. There wasn't much else to see except the charred wood and refuse left in the alley after the fire. I started back toward the street when a man, a much larger man than DuPont, came out the side door and got into the truck. He turned over the engine and switched on the lights before I could get clear.
Hey! What are you doing there? Hold it, mister, right there. Here, buddy, you just hold it. What were you doing back there, huh?
Well, right now, mister, I'm wondering what this load of bananas is doing in an antique shop.
What is it, Carl?
Well, I just caught this guy snooping around in the back.
What? It's Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, that's right.
You know him, DePa?
He's one of those insurance men I told you about.
Oh, well, what are you here for, Dollar? Didn't DuPont tell you he doesn't want any money from you people?
Now, why not? Because he's afraid we might have to take a good look around before paying
off.
No,
son.
Now, look, Dollar. Mr. DuPont has been okay with you people, so you got no reason to come snooping around. Especially after he's told you he don't want you around. So now maybe Mr. DuPont will have to do something to keep you away. Ain't that right, Mr. DuPont? You know what I mean.
Yes. Yes, all right. I'll do it, Carl. And he'll never bother us again.
Go on, Dollar. Get out of here.
At the time, I had no idea what they meant to do, so it wasn't easy to turn my back on them. But I did. Nothing happened. I went back to my hotel and hit the sack, and I must confess I slept later than usual the next morning. I was still in bed when the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
Well, hey now, where's my dynamic northern friend?
Oh, he's off today. I'm taking his place.
Well, in the news I got, well, I reckon it'll keep till tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, so long.
No, wait, Angie.
Yeah.
Did you find out anything about that blonde DuPont's been seeing?
Sure, everybody around the French Market coffee shop used to know her. Used to, meaning up till she went to work for Mr. DuPont.
She worked for DuPont?
Yeah, in the office at his store. Started in there about 3 months ago.
Well, come on.
Well, since then, nobody sees her anymore. At least none of her old gang.
You know where she lives?
Yep. The Pont Alba Apartments. That is, unless she has moved.
Well, what's her name?
Rose Ellen.
What?
Yeah, she used to be a dancer. That enough for you to go on?
Yeah, Angie, thanks. That's plenty. Expense account item 5, $1.40 cab fare from my hotel to the Pont Alba Apartments. The list of names on the register near the manager's office told me Rose Ellen's apartment was number 215. But when I got up there, the girl who opened the door wasn't a blonde.
Yes?
Oh, I'm looking for Miss Rose Ellen.
She isn't in.
Oh, she at work?
Who are you? I mean, are you a friend of hers?
My name's Dollar. Johnny Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator.
Well, she hasn't done anything, has she?
Well, not that I know of. Look, Miss...
Garbo.
Garbo?
May Garbo.
You're a dancer, aren't you?
How'd you guess?
Oh, I'm good at recognizing talent.
Oh? Would you like to come in? I've got some coffee on.
Well, that'll be just fine. Say, you've certainly got a nice view of the square from here.
I suppose.
Don't you think so?
Oh, sure, if you like that sort of thing. Me, I just think the square's kind of square.
Oh, that's good. That's very good.
I brought it up the day we moved here.
You and Rose move in here together?
Uh-huh. Oh, sit down, Johnny. Make yourself at home.
Well, thanks.
Gee, you're so polite. You wait to be asked.
Yeah. Look, tell me, what time do you think Rose will be home?
Oh, I couldn't say.
May, this is important. What time does she usually get home?
Well, I don't know. I mean, after all, she's got her own life to live, you know, and I'm not her keeper.
Okay, okay.
Sometimes she doesn't get home for days. Oh, I better get the coffee.
She ever say anything to you about the fire?
Yeah? What fire?
The fire down at the antique shop.
No, you want cream and sugar?
No, thanks, just black.
Good. When was that?
The fire? Last Thursday night.
That's funny.
What's funny?
That was the last time I saw her.
What?
Yeah. Rose went to work last Thursday, but she never came home.
Act two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. You don't have to be a special investigator to know that Americans don't take their civic responsibilities lightly. The Election Day turnout proved that, beyond any shadow of doubt. So now it's time for you to face up to another responsibility to the nation in just as straightforward a way. Our Ground Observer Corps needs volunteers. We at CBS Radio urge you to write or telephone your nearest Civil Defense Center to learn how you can help in this vast program that patrols our skies. Now, Act Two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar and the Royal Street Matter.
This was the screwiest deal I'd ever seen. A guy refusing insurance money he was entitled to. Rose Ellen was my one lead, so I continued questioning May, her roommate. May told me this was the first time Rose had been away so long without at least sending for a change of clothes. I asked about Rose's boyfriends. She told me Rose had been going with one other man beside DuPont, but she didn't know who he was. After May promised to call me if she heard from Rose Ellen, I left. Expense account item 6, $1.90, taxi from the Pontalba Apartments to the Hibernia Bank Building. My insurance contact, Binford, wasn't in. So while I waited for him, I wondered again why DuPont refused to sign the claim for the fire damage to his shop. Could he afford a loss of $16,000? I wondered if something had happened in that shop, something DuPont tried to cover up with a fire. I was wondering what it could have been when Binford walked in.
Well, I'm glad you're here, Johnny. We got trouble.
Huh?
I hear you paid DuPont a call last night.
That where you've been?
Yeah. He phoned me about 10, wanted me there fast. Oh, boy, I wish I had sense enough to stay away.
Well, what happened, C.D.?
Before I tell you that, you tell me what he said to you last night.
Nothing important, just something about fixing it so I couldn't bother him again.
Oh, well, he did.
How?
He canceled his fire insurance policy and every other policy ever bought from him.
Canceled?
Yeah, so you might as well go on back to your hotel and pack, Johnny. It's none of your affair now, no matter what he's up to.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's too bad it had to turn out this way. You want a drink before you go?
Yeah, I guess I need one.
Yeah. What'll it be, scotch or rye?
Scotch, neat, please.
Good, saves making a mess. When you reckon you leave?
Oh, I don't know. I'll check with the airline when I get back to the hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Thanks.
Better luck next time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's that.
C.D.
Hmm?
What about the policy?
Policy?
Did he return the policy to you?
No, he said do it tomorrow.
But he's covered until he does return it. Does he know that?
Why, no. I don't reckon he does.
Good, good. He might get careless. And as long as that policy is in force, I can bother him as much as I want.
Oh, I don't see what's the use, Johnny. He'll have it here by tomorrow evening.
That still gives me 24 hours to get lucky. C.D., you said something about a customer being with him when that kerosene lamp was knocked over.
Mm-hmm. According to what he told the fire department, there was.
You had that person's name?
Well, I should have. I took it in the fire department report, and I've got that right here. Here it is. Now, let's see. Mm-hmm. The name's Andrew W. DeLong. Address, 1515 West Claiborne.
There wasn't any Andrew DeLong at that address. We checked the telephone book and the city directory, and the only Andrew W. DeLong we found was out in Metairie, in a mausoleum. So we drove back towards C.D.'s office.
Well, now what, Johnny?
DuPont.
What?
Find out everything we can about DuPont and everybody who works for him.
But ain't nobody but his secretary and his assistant. Fella named Carl.
Yeah, how long has Carl been working for him?
Oh, about as long as she has.
Does this Carl own a fruit stand?
Well, not I know about. Why?
Oh, I just wondered. Hey, what time is it, C.D.?
2:15. Say, if we're going to check on DuPont's credit, we better get to the bank before the close.
You're driving. Let's move. Expense account item 7, $22.80. Telephone calls and a couple of gratuities to obtain a lot of information about DuPont. I learned, among other things, that he'd banked almost $11,000 in the past 3 months. Before that, almost nothing. But there's no law against making money, so I still had nothing concrete to go on. At 5:30, I left Binford, went back to my hotel, and there found a message from May, Rose Ellen's roommate, asking me to go to her apartment immediately. So I did.
Oh, Johnny.
Yeah, hi, May.
Oh, come in. Johnny. You know what you made me promise.
Yeah?
Well, it happened.
You mean you've heard from Rose?
Well, no, not exactly. But a man called this afternoon and talked about her.
Oh, well, I hope he had only nice things to say.
Oh, yes, he said she's just fine.
What?
Didn't you hear me?
Yeah, he said she's fine.
Fine.
Well, what else did he say?
Well, he said he was going to come by at 4 o'clock and pick up her clothes. I should have them ready.
No, but of course he didn't.
Well, he did so.
He did? Oh, what man? You know him? You get his name?
Mr. Dollar, you don't think I'd let Rose's things go out of here with a complete stranger, do you? Of course he told me his name.
Well?
You aren't nearly as polite as you were this morning.
All right, I'm sorry. What's the man's name, darling?
Oh, well, that's much better. It's Grant.
Grant?
That's right.
It doesn't register.
From the way he talked, he must be the one Rose was going with while she was dating that old antique.
You ever see this guy, Grant, before?
No, but I'm sure he's the one she talked about. Really, it used to get so tiresome. Carl this and Carl does that. Oh.
What?
I said, oh.
May, tell me, where did he say he was taking her clothes?
Well, he didn't say. Just put them in that old truck.
Thanks, sweetheart. See you later. I needed a fast car and a driver who could handle it, so I called Angelo Arsati. 20 minutes later, we parked in front of DuPont's antique shop. There was a dim light on inside. Now, look, brother, there's really no reason for you to get mixed up in this thing.
Are you kidding, son? Looks like DuPont ain't gonna answer.
All right, let's see what this hunk of stone will do to the glass. Here.
Hey, that got it. I can reach through to lock.
Like nobody here. Well.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, I see him. Carl, what happened to you?
Dollar.
Angie, call an ambulance. Tell him a man's been stabbed here.
Yeah, right, Johnny.
Dollar. Get to her before he can.
DuPont?
Gonna kill Rose. You got to help her.
DuPont wants to kill her? Why?
She found out. Smuggling.
Is that what DuPont's been up to?
Smuggling in banana shipments. Rose found out.
Where is she?
He thought I'd killed her, but I love her.
Yeah, well, look, tell me.
You gotta get to her before he does.
Where is she?
Old Spanish fortress.
Yeah?
Out on Bayou Slidell.
Old Spanish fortress on the Bayou Slidell.
Yeah.
You know where that is, Angie?
Oh, sure. An old ruin out in the swamp north of town near the highway bridge that goes over to the Gulf Coast.
Carl, how long ago did DuPont leave?
10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, we could beat him, Johnny, by cutting across the swamps. That is, if you could take it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's rugged.
Like what?
Johnny, did you ever ride a swamp buggy?
Oh, brother.
Yeah?
How much farther, Angie?
Well, should be right up ahead.
How can you tell? All I can see is swamp and marsh grass.
Yeah, well, I done a lot of trapping out here. I know the channel.
Think we'll make the old ruins before DuPont?
Well, we got to, don't we? Hey, there it is.
That old wreck is called a fortress?
Man, that's it.
Well, get us up as close to it as you can. I don't see anybody parked. Somebody approaching the bridge.
Here we are.
Come on, let's go.
Hey, look, John. There she is at the side entrance.
Yeah, I see. Rose! Rose Ellen!
She's scared. She ducked back inside.
Rose! We're friends of Carl's. He sent us to help you.
Well, come on, Johnny. We can get inside to her through this here doorway.
Okay. This place looks like it's about ready to fall apart. Rose!
Yeah, man. Dark in here, too. Yeah, don't step on them fallen bricks.
Okay. Rose! Rose Ellen!
Where's Carl?
DuPont tried to kill him.
Oh, no.
Rose, come on out here where we can see you. Rose!
Oh, he found out that Carl didn't kill me, is that it?
Yeah, but Carl's all right now. Look, Rose, I want you to tell me all you know about the fire at DuPont's shop. Were you there?
Yes.
Well, what happened?
DuPont had me tied up. Told Carl I'd found out what they were doing. Smuggling, I mean. He told Carl to kill me. He didn't know Carl and I was going to be married.
Go on, go on.
Carl argued with him. That's when the lamp got knocked over. He didn't stop arguing till DuPont said he'd kill us both. So finally, Carl told DuPont he'd take care of me. He had to, or DuPont would have killed us.
But instead, Carl brought you here.
Yes.
Oh, come on, Johnny. Let's get out of this dark hole.
Wait a minute, Angie. Rose, do you know why DuPont was afraid to report his fire to the insurance company?
Some of the things he smuggled in was lost in the fire. If anybody come poking around, they might have found out what he's doing.
What was he smuggling, do you know?
Little tiny boxes filled with white powder, hidden in the bananas.
Johnny, narcotics.
Yeah, sure. No wonder he banks so much money so fast.
I bank much more. After I get rid of you, Dollar.
Look at that. There he is in the door.
Yeah, watch it.
See, I ain't fooling, Dollar.
He can't see us.
No, but what a target he makes in that doorway against the light.
No gun, Johnny?
No. We can try one of these bricks.
Yeah, man, but if you miss...
Dollar!
Wish me luck.
Yeah. Dollar!
Right here, DuPont! Come on.
Oh, man, dear. You could qualify for the New York Yankees, Johnny.
All right, DuPont, on your feet. Let's get out of here. Expense account total, including rental on the swamp buggy, incidentals and transportation back to Hartford, $517.20. Remarks? Well, where he's going, DuPont wouldn't have any use for the insurance money anyway. Carl Grant turned state's evidence and clinched the smuggling charges against him. Because of that, Carl may get off easy. I hope so. He and Rose could make a very happy couple. End of remarks, end of report. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Thank you.
Our star will return in just a moment. If we are to remain alert to possible acts of aggression, we need the continuous operation of the Ground Observer Corps. And if the Ground Observer Corps is to remain on the job around the clock 7 days a week, your help is needed. Tomorrow, telephone your nearest Civil Defense Center and volunteer a few hours of your time each week to the Ground Observer Corps. Join our Ground Observer Corps at the Civil Defense Center nearest your home. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, three sets of twins, two men, two girls, and two fires that hit the coast of Florida with the impact of a hurricane. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. Written by Charles B. Smith, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Forrest Lewis, Lou Merrill, Lawrence Dobkin, and Frank Gersel. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino and Carl Fortina. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Cumberly speaking.
Welcome back. Well, I definitely feel that those programs that were written in 1956 and 57 tended to be a bit higher quality than those that would come later. This one was just a lot of fun. There's a great mystery hook, some superb action, as well as Johnny showing it, some of his more merciful side at the end, with him hoping for leniency for Carl. Well, now we continue on with our interview of John Abbott, author of the Who Is Johnny Dollar Matter.
Now, of course, the biggest and longest running Johnny Dollar was, of course, Bob Bailey. And, you know, we've talked about the serials, but then you have more than 4 years of weekly half-hour episodes. And I think, you know, it's fair to say the writing started out really well, but there was a bit of decline in terms of some of the mysteries. But they created just a really, like, almost unprecedented amount of continuity around Bob Bailey, Jack Johnstone did.
Exactly.
With, like, Alvin Cartwright.
And, you know, he could write things, he could keep things, he probably had a little card filing system so that he knew what he wrote. He probably had a pretty good idea of what he was going to write next, and he did a good job of character development.
Yeah, because, you know, most detective shows, you know, and I think that'd be true for both radio and television, you had, like, maybe a couple of supporting characters. But then you just have all of these characters who would show up and they'd say, oh, I'm so-and-so's lifelong friend, or, oh, he sold this for me. But here on, you know, with Johnny Dollar, I'm Bob Bailey, these are all, you know, these cases they connect to, and they're referring back to actual cases, not stuff that just happened off somewhere.
Right. Although there are instances where I pointed out, we say, oh, I worked with so-and-so on such-and-such a case, and you go back to the original story, it was somebody else. But the fact is that they were able to build continuity over time with previous cases, and it gave the persona of a character who's been around, done a lot of things, was known, trusted, and got the job done.
And of course, it's under Bob Bailey that we begin to get the idea that Johnny is a real life person, you know, because he gets, you know, he gets his cases broadcast over the radio. And
yeah,
that,
and, you know, that's
that
one
was
of the
something.
Things, it's one of the things that I wanted to do with the book, especially the beginning part of it. I wanted to write about Johnny Dollar as if he were a real life person, somebody that you could call up on the phone and say, "Hey Johnny, let's go out and have a beer and talk about the games this weekend." Somebody who, you know, was real. But it's all
yeah, and
allowed you to do that.
Once again, the Who is Johnny Dollar matter is available as a paperback or as a Kindle book. You can also receive it with a donation of $125 or more for either Volume 1 or Volume 2, or $240 or more for both volumes. And for the ebooks, it's $50 for one volume, $100 for both volumes, and we'll send you that from the Kindle store. All right, listener comments and feedback now. Brian writes in, "Adam, for the past 6 months or so, I've been listening to The War. I started listening to it when you first started the podcast in 2014, but I couldn't keep up with the episodes, on top of the episodes of The Great Detectives that I also was listening to at the time. Eventually, I stopped listening to it simply because there wasn't enough time to listen to everything at once. I planned to get back to it at some point, but never found the time. About 6 months ago, I decided to suspend listening to The Great Detectives and finish listening to The War. I just finished listening to it today. It was spectacular. And I'm not saying that just because my suggestions was one of the reasons you did the podcast. It really was wonderful to listen to all of those wartime radio programs. It was educational, entertaining, and at times very moving. I can only imagine how much research and time it must have taken you to pull it together. All I can say is thank you. Now I'll get back to Great Detectives. I'm way behind." And he includes an urge to please keep it up. Well, thank you so much, Brian, and I appreciate your kind words about The War. And I guess that is a challenge with something, you know, like The War, because it's a 277-episode series. Now, a few of them are only 15 or 20 minutes, but some of them are an hour, and there are probably more that are an hour or two than are 15 minutes. So I get what a challenge it can be to listen to the whole thing. It took quite a bit of time, a lot of time spent on the Radio Gold Index. I had a very firm vision of what I wanted to do. And I wanted the D-Day episode to be the 200th episode. And so that determined a lot of how we divided things. And I had to find programs to fill all those times that would be appropriate. And we used programs mainly from World War II, but there were some immediate post-war programs that we used, like things that were most of them done within 6 or 7 years of the war that told stories of the war. I think the latest program we did was Barbed Wire Christmas from, I think it was 52 or 53 with Edmund O'Brien in it. But the vast majority came from right in the midst of the war. And it took some time to research. One thing that I ran into is I signed up to do my first set of half marathons. And as the longest race I'd ever done before 2014 was a 5K, I realized, you know, I trained for about 7 months to get into shape to walk it, which meant that I started my training while I was also doing the war and hadn't thought about that. And, you know, kind of I found myself saying, okay, as this mileage gets up there and it's taking more and more of your time, how are you going to manage to do both these things at once? So I actually listened to the episodes of The War that I was going to record for the next week while I was out doing my longer walks while training for the half marathons. And it was in some ways very inspirational to hear about the sacrifices that people undertook during the war, both overseas and on the home front. It was certainly a cure for any sort of tendency towards whininess and to focus on doing the best I could for the charity we were raising funds for. And so we did that, and I also vacated the host chair on the old-time radio Superman show with Nathan Caldwell and Blaine Dowler helping me out by taking over the hosting duties of that for the summer so that I could get the war finished up. So we found ways to manage it, but I really benefited from completing this. Really working on the war was one of the things that I think I'm most pleased with that we've, in the course of almost 12 years of podcasting. And to be honest, in many ways, it kind of changed how I see the world. It's not like I did a 180, but it did bring a course correction that just understanding more about the war. You know, obviously some of it has got the feel of being propagandistic, but there's a lot of reality and a lot of truth of what happened and what people were thinking and feeling during the war that really just does make you think. And I heartily recommend it if you had relatives who fought in the war and you want to kind of grasp a little of what they went through and what it was like, or just to understand that portion of our history. As Brian said, it is, you know, a time commitment, you know, nearly 300 episodes. But during the course of that, we show how America started out in this very isolationist mode, and then, you know, the early days of the war, to the questions of how are we going to handle Reconstruction, to a few episodes that take a look at the post-war world. So it's a really exhaustive way, and you just kind of walk through that journey. And you can check it out, thewar.greatdetectives.net. Finally, we have a note from Chuck, who writes, "I love listening to the old shows. I didn't grow up listening to them, but got hooked a few years ago when I stumbled upon them on the radio one night. Thank you for providing this." Well, thank you, Chuck. I appreciate your support and your kind comment. All right. Well, that will actually do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow as we continue on with our look at 70 years of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, with a look at an episode from the Bob Reddick era. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.